Good morning, church. How y'all doing? Welcome to New Life. If this is your first time with us, we are thrilled to have you here. For everyone, it is great to be with you, and it does matter that you are here. We have been in this series, The Call to Adventure, and one of the things that instantly comes to mind when I've been thinking about adventure is every night at bed, we say prayers with our kids, my wife and I, and our son, Zechariah. We have a picture here of Zechariah. He prays every night, and has kind of fallen into this routine where he gives his high and lows in as he talks to the Lord. And so it goes something like this, where he says, my favorite thing today was, and he kind of fills in the blank. And then he says, and then my not favorite thing today was that we didn't get to go on an adventure. And I can't tell you how many times he'll say that. And it just crushes me as a dad, because what I want is that he says he got to go on an adventure. Last night was one of those, and I was like, what was the adventure, man? And he goes, we went and looked at flowers at a store. And I was like, all right. He's five. So adventure, the bar is pretty low still, I think. But if he doesn't go on an adventure, sometimes we have to remind him, you know, hey, what did we do? We went on a treasure hunt. Was that an adventure? He's like, oh, yeah. And then he ends up saying, you know, and thanks for that. Like, he thanks the Lord. And because I'm a father, I want Zechariah to have adventures. I want him to live life with joy and delight, with a sense that anything, at any moment, something great could happen. And then I think our Father in heaven wants this for us as well. And while these are merely the prayers of a child, I long for them to be the prayers of our church, the prayers of each and every one of you, that we would long for adventures of our own, that we would be on the lookout for where we can join Jesus in something as seemingly as grand as a church plant, or seemingly small as going out of our way to serve someone outside the church. That at the end of the day, my prayer for you is that you would look back and you would say, I lived an adventure with Jesus today. Because I firmly believe that the Lord has more stories, more adventures, more awe-inspiring moments, both large and small, for each and every one of us in this church. The more we lean in and listen to what he's saying, and we become willing to follow him and to obey. And my prayer for you as a church is not just each and every day, but that at the end of your life, you would look back on all your years and you could say, I lived a great adventure with Jesus. And for that to be true, you will be called to sacrifice. Through this series, we've explored the elements that accompany a life lived wholly to the Lord, and we've seen how a call to adventure involves passion, risk, vision, and today we're going to be seeing what it looks like to be called to sacrifice. And so I'm going to pray, Lord, I thank you for the opportunity to be here together this morning. Lord, I pray that you would teach us to sacrifice. Lord, that you would teach us to sacrifice for you, for what is good, for what is lasting. Lord, may you be what we value most. Pray this in your name, Jesus. Amen. If you look at the life of Jesus, he lived with passion. He risked greatly, and he had incredible vision. He lived a life of adventure, and he never did any of the things you might identify with adventure. He never climbed the highest mountains, crossed the greatest seas, traveled to distant lands. He never invented anything new. He never did any of these things. But he lived into the greatest adventure anyone on earth can have, and that is a relationship with the Father. Jesus entered life, and his entire life was a life of listening and obeying to what his Father in heaven wanted him to do. Jesus even said in John chapter 5, I tell you the truth, the Son can do nothing by himself. He does only what he sees the Father doing. Whatever the Father does, the Son also does. And he went on to say, I can do nothing on my own. For him, it was all about relationship with Jesus. And he modeled a life of adventure for us, a life of passion, risk, vision. And with all great adventures, ultimately, sacrifice. If you think about it, think of any great story you know or that you like, it likely has sacrifice in it. Touching stories, moving stories of generosity, compassion, and care, so much sacrifice. Inspiring stories of training, preparation, overcoming great odds, all sacrifice. development of new technology, startups, advancement in any given field or profession. Sacrifice again. Even the stories of love between two people or between parent and child, they all include sacrifice. And when we look at Jesus and we hear him say in Luke chapter 9, if any of you wants to be my follower, you must give up your own way, take up your cross daily, and follow me. If you try to hang on to your life, you will lose it. But if you give up your life for my sake, you will save it. And here we see a call to adventure, a call to adventure that is synonymous with sacrifice. The call to follow Jesus is always a call to sacrifice, which makes sense when you understand that. Sounds like someone got it. Sacrifice declares what you matter most. When you come to understand that, at the heart of sacrifice, it's a choice about what you value most. And in Jesus' life, it was clear. What he valued most was the will of the Father above all else. And that is what was here. This is why he was here on this earth. And what he was constantly trying to live out and carry out was the Father's will. His whole life was moving towards the greatest sacrifice the world would ever see. And knowing this, Luke says that as the time neared for his death, he resolutely set out for Jerusalem. He intentionally went there. And he knew what was coming. In fact, before Luke records that as resolutely, like just before that, he tells his disciples that the Son of Man must suffer many terrible things. He will be rejected by the elders, the leading priests, the teachers of religious law. He will be killed, but on the third day he'll raise from the dead. And other passages show that when he said that, the disciples grieved, which means they understood what he's talking about. They may not have understood the why, but they understood what was coming. And Jesus knew where he was going and what was going to happen, what the Father was inviting him into and asking of him, and he chooses to go. More than that, he's determined to go. Sacrifice declares what you value most, and Jesus was already declaring that the Father's will is what he valued most. And I just want to pause here for a moment and invite you to consider, do you value God's will most in your life? I mean, truly think about it. I mean, it sounds like a good Christian thing, but that's not natural to live that way, to operate that way. It can be. I mean, as we start to follow Christ and he gives us his spirit and we're renewed in our mind and our thinking becomes like Christ, but that's not how we start. It's not natural to be inclined this way. And this is the heart of sacrifice. It drives at worth. What is worth most in your life? What do you place value on? And if Jesus came to you this afternoon, just imagine. I don't even know what that would look like. And he asked you to give something or someone up. Is there something or someone you would have a hard time giving up? Think of my own life, and I think the first people right away, my wife and my kids. It'd be so hard. And some of you in our midst have already been through that sacrifice. Some out of sickness, and you saw it coming, and the Lord was inviting you to release them to him. He's calling them home. Others, it was a tragic accident. Others in this room, we may encounter that before we're called home. We have no idea what God invites us into. It can be brutally, brutally painful. Another thing I thought of is I don't really get caught up on possessions and all that. I was like, eh, take it all, it doesn't matter. But my wife, my kids, and honestly, I love the church. I love what I get to do. I love this church. And I was thinking career. If God called me out of this, how would that feel? It'd be hard. Am I willing to go? And this is not, mind you, a refreshing practice to do this, but it's renewing and enriching. It's informative. It allows you to see what might you be holding up and not allowing God to have his way with. It's about surrender. And this life as a follower of Jesus is going to lead us into places of sacrifice. Jesus himself stepped into the one of those incredibly hard moments in Jerusalem where he resolutely set out for. And he modeled for us how to sacrifice well, knowing what was to come, that he was going to die there. And after being there for a time, the Passover celebration came. He goes there. And he eats the Passover meal, and after his last supper, we're going to pick up in Luke chapter 22. It says, he walked away, then, accompanied by the disciples, Jesus left the upstairs room and went as usual to the Mount of Olives. There he told them, pray that you will not give in to temptation. And so this is after his last meal. And what I want you to see here is, it says, as usual. And this is the crazy thing, that Jesus has gone to Jerusalem. And every day, he has made the same routine. You can read about it in the chapter before. In verse 37, it says, every day Jesus went to the temple to teach, and each evening he returned to spend the night on the Mount of Olives. And the people knew this, and they would come in the morning and listen to him teach, and then he would leave and go to the Mount of Olives. And this is crazy, because if you know there's an imminent threat on your life, this is not what you do. You change patterns. You never travel the same roads. You sleep in different places. You stay unpredictable. And yet Jesus, who was pretty much unpredictable for his entire 3 years of ministry, all of a sudden, the last weeks of his life becomes absolutely predictable. Why? He was faithful to a pattern so he could ultimately be faithful to his purpose. His purpose was not to save himself. His purpose was to save you, to lay his life down. And he knew in order to be betrayed, there had to be a pattern. He willingly entered into this. He's already making a way for himself to be handed over. And then he moves in and he's telling the disciples in this place that they go as usual, pray that you don't give in to temptation. And you think, from what? Things that draw you away from God, things that you choose over God. He knows what's to come. He knows Satan was going to strike the shepherd and scatter the sheep. He knew that Peter was going to be sifted and that Peter himself would deny even knowing Jesus 3 times before the rooster crows. And he knew that the next day were going to transpire events that would be literally the worst that the disciples could ever experience. That the one that they saw as the Messiah, who they've pinned all their hopes on, who they believe is the one, who they've left everything to follow, is going to be handed over and killed in front of them. And he knows that for 3 days, he's not going to be able to step in and encourage them, assure them, lead them. He's in radio silence for 3 days. And he's telling them, pray that you don't fall into temptation, that you don't give in to temptation. And I think we could all use this prayer more and more in our own lives. I think it's amazing that we in the Western Church don't pray this every day. I myself, which just reveals how much self-focus we have, how much we think we can do this on our own. And this is Jesus telling his disciples who are right with him, pray this. And whatever could possibly pull you away from God or that you could choose in place of God, can I just tell you, God is better, flat out. It's not even a remote comparison. God is better. Choose him. Don't fall into temptation. Don't give in to temptation, I should say. And then he continues. He walked about a stone throws away. And this is probably, they say, about 40, 50 paces. So this is not very far. This isn't like he's so far away they can't hear what's going on. I mean, they're probably somewhat in earshot. And what begins to happen is Jesus, it says he knelt down and he prayed, Father, if you are willing, please take this cup of suffering away from me. Yet I want your will to be done, not mine. I want your will to be done, not mine. And Jesus prayed boldly, without conflict, throughout the Gospels. Like whatever he prayed, things would happen. He rebuked wind and calmed the sea. He multiplied fish and loaves. He healed the sick and blind. He even raised the dead. And then here, Jesus, who lived perfectly in line with the Father, saying, I just do what the Father says. I can't do anything without him, comes a moment that we haven't seen before. And this is so helpful for me, because I can connect with Jesus' own struggle, that his wrestling, his humanity before the Father, he's fully God but fully human, and I'm moved by the value he places on the Father's will over his own. Because he's asking if there's any other way to take this cup away. Nevertheless, I want your will, not mine. He lives in submission to the Father, and it challenges and it instructs me. And this moves into a place that it's an incredible, intimate moment we get to read and be a part of. And I'm so thankful that this is here. It's like a behind the scenes, because it then says, then an angel from heaven appeared and strengthened him. He prayed more fervently, and he was in such agony of spirit that his sweat fell to the ground like drops of blood. In the Old Testament, Chronicles 16:9 says, for the eyes of the Lord range throughout the earth to strengthen those whose hearts are fully committed to him. And we see this fulfilled right here in Jesus' own life, that he is experiencing this, being encouraged. And if you can imagine this moment, where we know later in the story, Peter draws a sword to protect Jesus when they come for him. And Jesus says, put that away. Don't you know that I could have a legion of angels at my disposal if I want? Just at my word. He knows what's available to him. And yet in this moment, how many does the Father send? One. Think of that job. Yeah, my son's about to do the impossible here. We need to encourage him. You're up. Really? I mean, and the angel came, and he stood by him. And what I want you to catch here is, like, I think sometimes we despise simple encouragement from the Lord. We don't like it. We want the big sign. We want the shout from heaven, the trumpet blast. In his greatest moment, like when all of humanity is on the line, Jesus has literally walked a flawless life. He is in perfect righteousness. This is before him. In the moment it matters most, when all is on the line, Father says one, sends one angel. We don't even know what he said. He may have shown up and been like, no idea what he did, but it was enough to strengthen him. And that's all Jesus needed to know. When I was in college, I used to see married couples, and I saw one, and I just thought it was so inspiring. Because they're in a room filled with people, and they could look across the room, and what they could communicate in a look was so much. And it just showed that they've lived life together. And I think sometimes, you know, I see newlyweds, and they're like trying to get each other's attention. They're like, signs. You know, when you're dating, it's like you're all out. You know, you've seen the nature shows with like the birds that go all crazy in color, right? I mean, this is what happens. And I think sometimes we have this in relationship with God. And the reality is like, no, as you mature and grow, you can hear the still small whispers from the Lord. You can take just an angel by your side. For us, we'd be like, yeah, I'd take that any day. All right? But you can take a verse. You can hear a lyric, you can hear something from a friend, and you can take it from the Lord and go, thank you. That's enough. He gives us what we need. And he met Jesus in the midst of this moment by sending an angel to be by his side. Don't despise the simple and the small encouragement he sends your way. And in agony of prayer, it says he dripped sweat that was blood. A lot of people are looking, what is that? It's actually a medical term. You can look it up, hematidrosis. Leonardo da Vinci described this with soldiers who were fearing their lives heading into battle, that they sweat blood. It's often a reaction of fear when imminent danger is involved with your life. There's a case recorded during the London Blitz where Germany was bombing London 56 out of 57 nights, and citizens sweat blood, because they were so terrified at the bombings that were happening day after day after day. There's been cases of sailors fearing a storm that's on its way. Even my wife has actually experienced this. She was in her 20s, and she was in a car accident. I turned too fast and rolled multiple times, just missing two trees. And when it was all said and done, and she was kind of shaken up and coming out of being in shock a little, she saw blood, little dots of blood all over her arms and legs, and she was trying to figure out, where was she cut? Where did the blood come from? And she realized it was literally from her pores, little droplets of blood all over. And this just shows you Jesus, the agony and the pain that he is in. He's fully God but fully human, and he is fearing over this decision and sweating,
drops of blood. And at last he stood up and again returned to the disciples, only to find them asleep, exhausted from grief. Has anyone been there? Can you relate? Exhausted just from grief. And they had true grief. They knew what was coming. They knew Jesus said he's going to die. They don't understand it all, but they know what's coming. And he finds them asleep, exhausted from grief. Why are you sleeping? He asked them. Get up and pray so that you will not give in to temptation. And so often, we won't fully understand the why of what God is calling us into, just like his disciples didn't understand in this moment. And in those moments, there's a couple things that I want you to hear when you're feeling called into a moment of sacrifice, or if you're in one now and wrestling with what is God asking, inviting you to give. And the first is Isaiah 55, 8 through 9. I don't have the scripture here. I don't want it. I want you to go write it down. Go find it. Memorize it. My thoughts are not your thoughts. They're not your thoughts, says the Lord, and my ways are far beyond anything you could imagine. For just as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts higher than your thoughts. That verse, I came to it in college. I have gone back to that so many times in my walk with God. When I don't understand, and what it does is it leads you into a place of trust. Even when you don't understand, can you trust the Father? And after saying these things, Jesus, he's betrayed, he's handed over, he's condemned and killed on the cross for us, and everything written about the Messiah was fulfilled in and through Jesus Christ. The question is, why did he do this? Well, we know he valued the Father's will over his own, the will to save sinners. Hebrews 12:2 says, for the joy set before him, he endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of God. The joy set before him was you. You and me, every single person. He died for us. And this is one of the things, too, when you enter in to a place of wrestling, that sometimes you can feel both joy and lament. You may have joy at reaching or going towards whatever that goal is, and at the same time have lament. And I see the younger generations really struggling with this, because they're in touch with their emotions, they're in touch with their feelings, and they're saying, I'm moving and I have great joy, but I have great lament and grief, and I feel like because of that tension, it must be wrong. And they want to back away. No, that's not wrong. That's normal. Those polarizing feelings don't in and of themselves mean it's wrong. It can be disoriented to have both feelings, but it's normal. When you say yes to something, you have to say no to something else. It's natural. It's what happens. And whenever God calls us to sacrifice, there will be times where you may have glimpses of joy in what it is. But it doesn't mean it's not without pain. We're a church planting church. It's our passion. We love to plant churches. People have followed and changed careers and gone to new places. And that's joy-filled and great. It's just brutally hard, too, because of the relationships that change as a result. And Jesus' sacrifice is one of the most brutal deaths ever recorded, a story of unparalleled sacrifice, of loss and suffering and disillusionment and chaos. And then, through the resurrection, it's awe and wonder and beauty and glory. And when we embrace sacrifice that God invites us into, it's always going to be beautiful in the end. And we talk about walking through life expecting that something amazing could happen at any moment. I mean, that's the resurrection. He said it was coming, but they still didn't see it. Jesus lived on adventure with his Father. Why? So that you could live on adventure with his Father. That he invites us into that same adventure. Romans 12 says this, and so, dear brothers and sisters, I plead with you to give your bodies to God because of all he has done for you. Let them be a living and holy sacrifice, the kind he will find acceptable. This is truly the way to worship him. Don't copy the behavior and customs of this world, but let God transform you into a new person by changing the way you think. Then you will learn to know God's will for you, which is good and pleasing and perfect. And mind you, this was written by a guy who was formerly an enemy of God. It was not natural to him to lean towards Jesus and follow the sacrifice. And yet, he came and was convinced. And the way to worship him, living your life unto Jesus, following Jesus, it always starts with sacrifice. It starts with you laying down your own life to allow him to take up yours. And Jesus is calling you to a life of adventure. It's what Paul goes on to say. This is the greatest adventure you could ever live in life. And if any of you are here today where you have yet to say, I want you, Jesus. I want to follow you with my life. Would you do that today? It's the greatest adventure you could ever know. And it doesn't end at death. That's just a doorway we walk through with him forever. And the way you do that, it says in two chapters before, in chapter 10, he says, if you openly declare that Jesus is Lord and believe in your heart that God raised him from the dead, you will be saved. For it is with your heart that you believe and are made right with God. I should get closer when I read. For it is by believing in your heart that you are made right with God, and you openly declare with your mouth that you are saved. For everyone who calls on the name of the Lord will be saved. It doesn't matter where you're at, what you've done. You just call on the name of the Lord. You invite him into heart. You believe what he has done. The adventure that Jesus lived with the Father is so that you can be connected to the Father yourself. That you can have him in your life, that he'll live in your heart. For some of us, you've been down this road a while. You've been walking with Jesus for a number of years. And that's where this really comes in. The whole pathway, the verse that we've been anchoring this whole thing in, saying Jesus died for everyone so that those who receive his new life, it's not just about receiving it for what you get. You'll no longer live for yourself. Instead, you'll live for Christ who died and was raised for you. This is why Christ came. This is why he died. It's always coming back to the start. There was a quote I heard this week from a pastor who was basically saying, as we start the Christian walk, it starts with the gospel. It's a laying down of our life. And the further you go, you're always coming back to that. It's always about laying down your life, accepting what he has done for you. Because sacrifice is choosing the future now. Wherever you're at, this is what Jesus came for. If there's a sacrifice he's inviting you into, it's choosing the future now. Jesus chose in the garden 2,000 years ago, you. He chose you then. He wrestled with the will of the Father, the promise. He promises his spirit to help us. We saw that in the garden. The Lord sent an angel to be with him. And if he is asking you to some new sacrifice, will you follow the example of Jesus and say, I want your will to be done, not mine. I want your will to be done, not mine. And I don't know how the Lord has been speaking to you through this series. If there are things that he's inviting you to become in yourself, fully who you're created to be and live in passion for him. If he's inviting you to risk in new ways for him. If he's giving you vision of what could be that isn't right now. Or if he's inviting you into a place or a season of sacrifice, whether it's a career change, it's time with your job and focusing on your family, if it's giving up some desire of yours so that you can give more generously to someone else, if it's giving of your time, I have no idea, but we fully believe the Lord is inviting each and every one of us into adventure. And I know the Lord wants to do some work here this morning beyond our words, and so I'm going to invite the band up, and we're going to have prayer ministers in the front and the back. If you need prayer for anything, we'd love to pray with you. And as the band comes up and we enter this time, I would invite you to just ask the Lord to speak. And if you are being called into some kind of sacrifice, would you receive encouragement this morning? Would you ask for God to encourage you in the midst of it? And would you choose to say, your will, not mine? Lord, I thank you for today. Lord, I thank you for everyone in this space. God, I ask that you would move in a powerful way. Lord, I thank you that you are a God who did not put things in order and tell us to act a certain way, but you came and demonstrated. You modeled, you lived what we couldn't live with the Father, Lord, and that you willingly chose the future. You sacrificed your entire life for us so that we may have life in you. And Lord, I ask that you would meet us in this time, Lord, and we would value you above all else. Pray this in your name, Jesus. Amen.